to Cascadia Public Radio.
In Berkeley, I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Tuesday in Sacramento, Governor and actor Arnold Schwarzenegger said, quote, California's day of reckoning is here. Our wallet is empty, our bank is closed, our credit is dried up. According to state economists, California may be broke in less than 2 weeks following a more than $20 billion budget deficit. Meanwhile, in other economy news, Greg Palast says, quote, they may be crying about General Motors bankruptcy today, but dumping 40,000 of the last 60,000 union jobs into a mass grave won't spoil Jamie Dimon's day. Dimon is the CEO of JP Morgan Chase Bank. While GM workers are losing their retirement health benefits, their jobs, their life savings, while shareholders are getting zilch and many creditors getting hosed, a few privileged GM lenders led by Morgan and Citibank expect to get back 100% of their loans to GM, a stunning $6 billion. The way these banks are getting their $6 billion bonanza is stone-cold illegal. Palast points out that Steve Rattner, Obama's so-called car czar, has a different plan for GM. Grab the workers' pension funds to pay off Morgan and Citi in direct violation of the 1974 Employee Retirement Income Security Act. Joining us to talk about all of this is our regular Wednesday correspondent, Catherine Austin Fitz of the Solari Network here on Community Business. Catherine, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thanks, Nora. It's great to be back.
Thanks for coming back. Catherine, let's start with the California budget crisis. We broached this subject last week. California is the sixth largest economy in the world, and it's pretty much crashing at this point. What's going on from your perspective?
If you look deep into the California budget, what you'll see is, the way to look at this story is to ask the question, would California be better off as a sovereign nation on its own with or without the federal government? Because what you're watching is California citizens are paying federal taxes, the money goes up to Washington, and then it comes back in very sort of complex and controlled ways. And then California pays taxes to the state, and it comes back. And when you look at those flows, as well as the different pools of capital that get built up, the reserves, like the pension funds, what you'll see is the relationship of California with the federal government is becoming more and more expensive for California. So, for example, if California announced tomorrow that they were going to start issuing their own currency, And instead of paying everybody with dollars, they were just going to pay them with California. Let's make up a name, California dollars. Suddenly you would wake up and California would be getting less drained by the Federal Reserve banking system. Okay? If California woke up tomorrow and said, you know something, all these federal mandates that we pay for this and that, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. And by the way, the federal government has lost, that we know of, there's $4 trillion missing from federal accounts. Well, that works out to $14,000 per household in California. You know something? We're going to take all those federal taxes, escrow them, and use them to pay for these various, you know, expenses. So there's a whole, California has a $21 billion deficit in the current framework. But if everybody sat down and said, you know something? We're going to reinvent the fundamental framework, because this is no longer, it's no longer feasible to stay in the old framework, then, you know, then there's a lot that can happen much more creatively. And the issue really comes down to, is California going to continue to have both a relationship with the federal government and its citizenry that does not make fundamental economic sense? Because that's really the problem. And so the question is, are we prepared to do what we have to do to change to something which is fundamentally economic?
You know, and Obama is bailing out GM, and we'll get to that in a minute. Do you think California's schools, healthcare centers, and small businesses could be bailed out by the federal government as well?
Well, when you say that Obama's bailing out GM, the question is he bailing out the bankers who lent to GM, or is he bailing out GM? I mean, it's not clear to me, you know, if you look at the numbers, what's really going on. If the federal government wanted to bail out California, it absolutely could. But bailouts is not the solution. If you look at the polls I've seen, it's amazing. The general population is strongly against a congressional bailout of California. Now, they've been strongly against a lot of these bailouts. It hasn't mattered. So, you know, a lot of the bank bailouts had very little public support, and yet they happened. And I think that the important question is, are we as both municipal and state leaders and citizens prepared to sit down and really dig in and say, how do we switch our both our taxation and our spending so that we can encourage fundamentally productive economic behavior? Because right now, the problem with most governmental budgets is that they run counter to good behavior. Let me give you a stupid little example. When I was financial advisor to New York City long ago, and when I was on Wall Street, the budget director used to tear her hair out because of how much money New York spent on littering. If you look at how much money local government spends on just littering and other sort of sloppy behavior by citizenry, it's absolutely extraordinary. And yet, when you sit down to do the budget, you can't assume that people are going to behave well. So instead, you've got to cut, you know, critical social services. You've got to cut something you've got to make the assumption that you can't depend on people to change or to behave responsibly. And there's tremendous amounts of money. Another is the whole thing we've talked about the pressure between sort of money that generates income for corporate people who are very supportive of political campaigns and the political leadership versus, you know, switching that in ways which are more economic for the taxpayer. And generate more income for small business. So there are all these issues, and we talked briefly last time about participatory budgeting, which is a movement that got going in Latin America when the crunch hit in the 90s. It started in Porto Alegre in Brazil, and what happened was the citizens just got together with municipal officials and said, you know, we're going to participate in creating the budget. And I think if there was a lot more citizenry participation, you'd get a real groundswell at the grassroots for supporting municipal and state officials in reengineering a lot of the rules.
That's the voice of our community business reporter, correspondent, Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, let's talk about the GM bailout and, you know, the illegal snatching of workers' pension funds by the U.S. government to pay off Citibank and Chase Morgan. How can people protect themselves? And what does this say about the state of pension funds and retirement benefits for the working class at this point?
Well, it's of great concern. We have tremendous amounts of equity in this country in pension funds. So we've seen, as the boomers have aged, we've seen the growth of both state and local pension funds and then corporate pension funds. And the federal government guarantees the corporate pension funds with the Pension Benefit Corporation, and the state and locals are not. You know, one of the things I don't understand is how the federal government can sort of dilute those pension funds as opposed to having to guarantee them through Pension Benefit Corporation. There are all sorts of questions about what's really going on. How do we protect ourselves? If we as beneficiaries allow our pension funds to basically be channeled into Wall Street and used to finance the centralization in big corporations, this is what's going to happen. And that's why it is imperative that we do everything that we can to encourage our municipal and state officials to relook at the investment policies, because we've seen a lot of this money poured in, a lot of our retirement savings poured into the financial sector. We've lost tremendous amounts of money and in the process financed a lot of ridiculousness in the economy, which is going to hurt us, you know, in our personal household budget and hurt our municipal and state budget. So when you permit your retirement savings to be used in a way that does general harm, it's going to come back to haunt you in a variety of ways, and that's what we're seeing now. How you can protect yourself, I think, you know, if you're in a state or local pension fund, you're going to have to be part of the groups, the associations that lobby to make changes and to watchdog. Transparency is unbelievably important. And so one of the things I would recommend to anybody involved with associations, either of corporate alums or state and local government, is to insist that there is very detailed and comprehensive disclosure about what stocks and bonds are and other investments are in those funds. And then who's making the fees, you know, who are the fee flows, who are the managers? And I think if you look at the names that have been in the press with, you know, the names bandied around for all the different fraud and corruption and losses and everything else, and you look at basically who your pension funds have assigned to manage this money, it's terrifying. I mean, when a human being commits murder, you know, you don't then put them in charge of your daycare center or leave them in charge of your daycare center. So if you have investment firms that are basically engaging in all sorts of fraudulent activity, you know, there needs to be a process that, that basically those firms and those people are not allowed to do business with our retirement savings. So I think just bringing transparency to who's making money and where that money's going could have a huge impact, and that's where I'd start.
And finally, Catherine, you know, talking about the corruption and the squandering of people's life savings through retirement pension funds or savings accounts by these huge corporate banks, you know, you talk a lot about financial permaculture, and I, you know, I keep hearing this question being asked in my family and in my friends and communities. Is this a good time to take your money out of the banks and put it under the mattress?
Well, I think, you know, if we all take our money and put it under under the mattress and it doesn't circulate, then, you know, we're going to shoot ourselves in the foot. Although, you know, I'm a great believer in diversification. So having money under the mat, you know, having some liquidity is good. I tend to keep my it was funny about a year ago, there was some horrible headline, and I thought, you know, I really should have more cash lying around. And then I said, no, forget it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a 2-year supply of multiple vitamins. Because the multiple vitamins in an inflation period will go up in value. So, you know, so I'm not saying don't have some, but you do want to look for ways to circulate. I think that the key thing is, well, let me give you an example. Do you know what a partnership or hand is?
No.
Okay, I love this. And I first learned from it from immigrant groups about 10 years ago, and it's done all over the world, and it's something we can do. A hand or a partnership, let's say a group of people, we have this thing called Solari circles, but let's say 10 of you come together and decide you want to have a potluck dinner once a month, or you could do it once a week. It really depends on what's energizing for you. And so it tends to be entrepreneurs who are helping each other in a variety of ways. It's kind of like a self-help group, and you come together and you pick an amount of money. Let's say you choose $10. So 10 of you come together, $10 is your hand, you put $10 in the pot, and then one person takes it. Okay? And so what that means is you're basically your deposits are in each other instead of in the banking system. And over time, what you'll see is the biggest source of income when I was on Wall Street was what's called float, which was the interest we got on the balances that we held. So let's say you have a group of people that has $100 on average in their checking account. They come together, all 10, you know, everybody puts 100 in the pot, one person takes 1,000. And you'll see groups use this. It's like a savings club. There's no interest, so there's no reporting, there's no taxation, whatever. So rather than earning interest at the bank, you're simply floating each other. And over time, it means you and your friends get the float as opposed to the banking or the financial system. And when it combines with getting together and helping each other in a variety of different ways, for groups where there's high trust, it's simply a way of banking each other instead of putting your money in the financial system.
Well, as always, Catherine Austin Fitz, we appreciate your incredible ideas and your insight and analysis on these very complicated and multi-layered problems that we're having, especially here in California. Catherine Austin Fitz, you are with the Solari Network. People can go to solari.com for more information. As always, thank you so much for joining us today on Community Business.
Thank you, Nora.